don't make the mistake.
All right, thank you. Representative Gianello.
Mr. Chairman, the media seems to do what they want. They classify things the way they want to classify them. The gun issues are always on the front page when it's one way, and when someone has protected someone by owning a gun, it's on page four in a little column over in a corner. So it just depends on what the media is trying to promote at the moment.
All right. Now, we're back to the motion to substitute the dash two amendments for the dash one amendments. Seeing no further discussion, we will go to the vote. The clerk will please call the roll on Representative Prezanski's motion to substitute the dash two amendments for the dash one.
Yes.
Representative Gianella?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
No.
No.
Yes.
Chairman Anderson?
No. The motion is defeated. The dash one amendments are in front of us. Is there further discussion on the dash one amendments? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' original motion to adopt the dash one amendment states AR 88. And that's with the technical correction of changing created to create on line 21 of page one.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we have a brief explanation in terms of the differences between dash one and the original bill?
Representative Hansen, with all due respect, I thought I spent 3 or 4 minutes talking about the difference right after Representative Prezanski made his motion, but I'll go over that again. Representative Prezanski's dash two is no longer in front of us, so what's in front of us now is an amendment to the Constitution, and this amends the amendments to the Constitution, the HJR, to specify that the people of the state of Oregon have a right to a public trial by a jury without delay in any criminal prosecution. And then it specifies that this is not meant to undermine the federal constitutional rights of the defendant. It applies this right to criminal proceedings which are pending or commenced on or after the date the section is approved, but there's an exception about when a trial before a judge without a jury is already in progress so that we don't interrupt any existing trial. And authority of the district attorney to enter negotiated pleas and dispositions in criminal prosecutions is maintained, just to make it clear that that is not undermined by this right. And I apologize, actually, those latter portions were not explained earlier, so your question was legitimate, and I apologize for my remark. Does that help? All right. Any further discussion? All right, we're back to calling the roll on the motion to adopt the dash one amendments to HJR 88.
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Ferry?
Aye.
Representative Martin?
No.
Chairman?
Aye. The motion is passed and the dash one amendments are adopted. And Representative Simmons, do you move that HJR 88 as amended by the dash one amendments be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Yes, and including the conceptual amendment on line 21.
Well, the technical correction.
Yes.
Very well.
Technical correction.
Colleagues, we have that motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to send HJR 88 to the floor with a due pass as amended.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Aye.
Yes.
No.
Aye. The motion is carried. HJR 88 is sent to the floor with a due pass. Yes, President Prezanski.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I'd like to go ahead and give notice of possible minority report on HJR 88.
All right. The record should reflect notice of the possible minority report from Representative Prezanski. I'll designate myself the carrier on HJR 88. This concludes the work session on HJR 88. We next have up HJR 89, so I'll call us into work session on HJR 89. Council, where are we with HJR 89?
Mr. Chairman, HJR 89 has to do with jury composition, and in the original form, prohibits a person from serving as a juror if the person is not registered to vote in Oregon or has been convicted of a felony or served a felony sentence within the 15 years immediately preceding the trial. The committee has before it the dash one, the dash two, the dash three, and the dash four amendments. I am familiar with the dash one and the dash fours. However, the dash twos and threes were requested by parties other than your committee council. The dash ones clean up the language in the original resolution and do include the preamble and some other clarifying language. The dash fours are substantially similar to the dash ones, except provide that the jury composition provision applies not only to what has historically been referred to as petite juries, the trial jury, but also to grand juries.
All right. First, I'd ask Representative Simmons, in order to get to the issue, if you move adoption of the dash four amendments to HGR 89.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move adoption of dash four amendments to HGR 89.
Representative Simmons moves adoption of the dash four amendments. And Representative Przanski, do you move substitution of the dash three for the dash four?
Mr. Chair, I do. I don't know what the dash twos, is that something you want to take care of?
No, that was an earlier version, and I don't think that...
Pardon?
Yes, that had to do with the original bill and a senator's request, I understand.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move to substitute the dash threes for the dash fours.
Colleagues, Representative Przanski moves to substitute the dash three amendments for the dash four amendments. Representative Przanski, I'll go ahead and ask you to describe the differences, and then I'm going to invite up Justice Edwin Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The basic difference between the dash threes and what I've been able to see in the dash fours is that it basically goes into amending the existing article in the Constitution that it's going to impact. Specifically, you're going to see the dash threes would be folded into Article 7 as amended, Section 5, that is currently on the books within our Constitution. Again, for me, this is a much clearer perspective for the voters to be able to look at as to what is a current section of the Constitution that is going to be amended as compared to sticking something into Article 1 under the Bill of Rights, which now has currently 42 sections, and instead of forcing people to go from one article to the next article to find out what's controlling, this would be much more simpler and concise and would allow the individuals to see. Now, the other changes that are within the two in the dash three, as well as in the dash four, it does have the limitation for individuals, and I just want to make sure, yeah, that individuals who have felony convictions or sentences within the immediate 15 years prior to when they've been called to jury duty would be out. Under the dash three, it does not limit the jury pool to exclusively registered voters, and the reason for that is that I believe that we want to make certain that we continue to have the broad perspective, broad base of a jury of their peers, and by limiting it to a list of registered voters, it's my belief that it does not provide for the widest and perspective of prospective jurors. The other questions I guess I would raise, I just want to fill out maybe in discussion we should go over some more of the debate part as to the philosophy of who actually, just because someone's registered to vote doesn't mean that they're taking that civic duty or obligation seriously. Just looking at the recent polls of how many people did or didn't vote that were in fact registered. Mr. Chair, I do have one question, and that would be on the dash fours. There's a section that has been added. It's a section three, and I guess I'm curious as to, I assume these are from the chair, as to the perspective of why that has been inserted, because it seems to me that that could in fact be what I would call a poison pill.
Well, actually, if I, the third section here on the dash four amendments is simply this. Once we've said that there's a prohibition to persons who are not having been convicted of a felony or not being registered voters serving on the jury, or in fact a requirement that you be a registered voter and a prohibition against felons serving on the jury, say you're halfway into the trial and then somehow it's found that the deep dark secret of one of the jurors is that 10 years ago in Minnesota he was convicted of a felony, are you obligated to declare a mistrial? I'd say you could declare a mistrial and start all over again, but you're not going to be obligated to by the provision in the Constitution, because once the time to check out the juror qualifications will be before the jury is impaneled and sworn, and that's the time to object to their qualifications, not wait until after the trial has started or the trial is over and to engage in a game of gotcha. So this is designed to make it clear that juror qualifications issues need to be raised before the jury is impaneled and sworn. I can imagine, and let's say the criminal defendant, and not the attorney for the defendant, knew that this juror had a conviction for a felony 10 years before and kept it to himself or herself until after the trial was over. And, of course, then tells the defense attorney, and the defense attorney has to advise the court and raise the issue that there was a disqualified juror. It could throw things into disarray. This just says the time to raise that issue, the time to be clear on that issue is up to the time they're impaneled and sworn, just as counsel is supposed to otherwise object to jurors in the process before the jury is impaneled and sworn. That's the reason for that provision.
In your analysis and example, I guess that would fit for the state as well. The state would not be able to move for a mistrial based on a juror being convicted within that 15 years.
Correct. It's a sword that cuts both ways. Justice Peterson, would you like to come up? Colleagues, I'm introduced to you, and I'll ask him to introduce himself for the record. Chief Justice Edwin Peterson, retired, former Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman Mannix and members of the committee. My name is Ed Peterson, and I'm a former Chief Justice of the State of Oregon. And before that, I practiced law. Before I became a justice on the Supreme Court, I practiced law in Portland for 22 years. And I might say that I've tried a lot of jury cases. Somebody did a survey 1 year. I forget what year it was, but in 1 year I tried 24 circuit court cases alone in Multnomah County. I'm here to talk about the provision in H.J.R. 89 that would require jurors in criminal cases to be registered to vote in Oregon. You're all aware that the constitutions of Oregon and the United States both provide for trial by jury in civil and criminal cases. And I think that means that there'd be a trial before a cross-section of the adult community. I think that was the practice in England, it's practice in the United States. Of course, it was limited to men for a long time, but now both men and women can serve on juries. I checked with the Secretary of State yesterday and learned that 15.6% of all persons eligible to vote don't register to vote. So the effect of this proposed constitutional amendment would be to take away the right, if you will, of that almost 16% of all eligible persons to sit as jurors in criminal cases. Now, in 1994, I was the chair of a task force that looked into racial problems in the judicial system, and I have a copy of the report before me. I would just like to read a little bit from that, and I'm not going to be very long. I appreciate your permitting me to testify during this work session. On page 78, it says, "The extent to which minorities have been underrepresented in juries has been the subject of considerable research. A consensus exists that American jury systems tend to overrepresent white, middle-aged, suburban, middle-class people and underrepresent other groups." And consistent with that statement, the task force made two recommendations, recommendation number 7-1 and number 7-2, the latter being directed to the legislature, the former being directed to the Chief Justice. But the essence of those recommendations was that instead of restricting the right of people to serve, to be called for jury duty, the law should be changed to permit the use of such things as public utility consumer lists, city directories, tribal rolls, and income tax lists in order to correct this disparity between minorities and non-minorities serving on juries. Now, I believe that if this constitutional amendment becomes law, the trend that we noted in the report would be exacerbated Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get the information I needed because I was only asked to come here yesterday. I checked with the Bureau of Municipal the Population Research Organization at Portland State to see what percentage of minorities eligible to vote actually register to vote, and I was not able to get that. And I could, if you're interested, I'd be glad to get that. But I personally am convinced that the percentage is a lot higher among minorities than among non-minorities. And that's why I say that this bill would exacerbate that trend. I don't know. As I say, I've had a lot of experience trying cases, mostly civil cases. But I just ask, has it been demonstrated that in order to protect the rights of crime victims to justice, people who are not registered to vote should not serve on juries? Or to put it otherwise, what evidence is there that the rights of crime victims have been eroded because people who are not registered to vote have served on juries? Now, I dug out the statute on juries. It's ORS 10.020. That sets forth the eligibility for serving on juries. And I, of course, realize that if this is passed, it would, whatever the statute says, would go out the window. But the statute does make reference to a very important point, and that is, the statute begins, "The opportunity for jury service shall not be denied against a cognizable group in this state." Now, the effect of this constitutional amendment would be to deny jury service of a cognizable group, and that is those who are eligible to vote, to register to vote, I should say, and who do not register to vote. As I said, I've tried a lot of jury cases, and I can think of no case in which it made a bit of difference to me as a lawyer trying the case, and in my opinion, nor did it make any difference in the ultimate result, whether the juror was registered to vote or not. So I'm here to speak against that provision, and those are the end of my remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justice Peterson. All right, colleagues, we have in front of us the -3 amendments being proposed as a substitute for the -4. I would comment on the question of jury service. I was always taught that serving on a jury was a civic duty or a civic obligation rather than a civil right. I'm not aware of people breaking down the doors of the courthouse demanding the right to serve on a jury. I am aware of people who are taught in civics class that they have an obligation to serve on a jury when called, unless there's an appropriate exemption allowed. And that's why we refer to it, in my view, I'll call on you next, Representative Pazansky. I'm aware of the concept of jury duty. It's interesting that the statute talks about the opportunity for jury service. In the state of Oregon, one may obtain the opportunity for jury service by filling out a postcard and dropping it in the mail. It's called a voter registration card, which you can pick up at any government office as well as any post office. And one doesn't even have to vote after that, although at some point, if you haven't voted at all, you'll have to renew your registration in order to maintain the registration. So every citizen of the state of Oregon can register for jury duty under this provision to seek that opportunity, that right, if we want to call it that, by filling out a voter registration card. You don't even have to vote. However, the primary motivation in registering to vote should be to vote. I do think it's an important goal to seek diversity in the court system. It's an important goal to seek diversity and participation in government generally. But I think we slip a gear when we say that we're going to obtain diversity by saying that we don't want people to vote, or we don't require them to vote or to register to vote in order to participate in certain ways or to carry out certain civic obligations. To me, the answer is more aggressive voter registration drives, better civics classes, better orientation for new citizens as to their rights and obligations, outreach programs for a variety of communities. And that's a great way to achieve diversity throughout the system of government, not just on jury panels. At the same time, we are talking about grand juries and criminal juries here. I would mention parenthetically that until a few years ago, the voter registration requirement was imposed because that's where juries were drawn from. And I don't know when Justice Peterson last tried a case, but I think that there wasn't any question about asking about whether people were registered to vote until a few years ago because that's what list was used to draw the jurors from. So it was sort of an automatic, at least when I last did a trial, which was a few years ago, a full civil jury trial, that was a given. As far as that goes, when we're talking about a criminal trial or a grand jury proceeding, we need to understand that somebody else's rights are also at stake. It's not just the victim's rights to justice and having a good jury. It's the defendant's right to have a jury composed of people who care enough about their civic obligations to have at least filled out a postcard, put a 32-cent stamp on it under today's postal rates, dropped it in the mail, because these people are going to be determining whether or not somebody else is going to have to spend as little as perhaps a day or two in county jail, maybe pay a fine instead, or life in prison, or suffer the death penalty. And I would rather see a system where we say that the qualification for getting into that jury box includes enough civic interest to have registered to vote. The second element is the disqualification to say that the individual should not have been a felon within the last 15 years. And by the way, the choice of 15 years is quite deliberate. We've gone out of our way to say that felons are prohibited from possessing firearms for 15 years. It's incongruous to me that until these changes were made for a while, we'd said to felons, you can't possess a firearm, but we'll trust you to be in the jury box as a grand juror or as a juror. That seemed to be an incredible logical leap. In any event, we have the Dash 4 Amendment, which basically is the proposal by Representative Simmons. We have Representative Przanski's proposal to substitute the Dash 3 Amendment. And the policy choice, the essential policy choice, is whether or not you think the voter registration requirement ought to be imposed.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Mr. Chair, we've gone around and around and around about this voter requirement piece for the last 3 years. And the reality is like the justice said so eloquently, there's no proof that somebody who is not registered to vote is somehow less able to determine guilt or innocence than someone who is registered. We also know that the bulk of the people who are registered don't vote. So it's ludicrous to me to assume that somehow because I haven't moved out of my house in the last 10, 20 years, and I'm still registered even though I haven't been to a place to vote for the last 10 or 20 years, that somehow I'm more capable or qualified than someone who is not registered to vote. Now let's go to the issue of people being registered to vote. You and I come from very different backgrounds. I know many, many working class people who would never think of registering for anything having to do with the government. They are intelligent, hardworking people who have no trust in government at all. Kind of like some of your friends with the gun lobby. but the point is that they've made a conscious effort. They've made a conscious decision to not register to vote. Does that mean that they can't figure out, they can't sit in a courtroom and determine somebody's guilt or innocence? I would suggest to you that that would not be the case. If this becomes law that we end up limiting the jury pool, we were very thoughtful in 89 about broadening the jury pool based on the long study that was done to determine who was not represented in the courtroom. And let me be clear, it's not just a jury pool. It's on the bench, it's the lawyers, it's the law enforcement people, it's the district attorneys. People of color are not represented anywhere except as defendants in most criminal cases. And so to eliminate the possibility of having as many people as possible registered or eligible to serve on jury duty is insulting. And it has nothing to do with civil responsibility or what they think about the community they live in. I don't know how to make any of you understand this any better. You know, I live this, so I know what I'm talking about. And if your life is on the line and you walk into a courtroom and you don't see anybody that looks like you, That's a frightening experience. And I wouldn't be asking whether they're registered to vote or not. I would hope that they have an open mind and they're going to listen to the facts and make the right decision. So I'm done.
President Pazansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for all of us, we need to realize that both of these amendments do have the prohibition of a felon for the 15-year period, so that's not a distinction. I do find it interesting that when we look at the letter that we, I believe all of us received, dated May 6th from Richard Baldwin of Access to Justice for All Committee, reflects on what the current makeup of states and what they're doing as to selecting the jurors. We currently fit within the largest group of 27 states in the District of Columbia, and using a combination of the voters list with at least one other list, ours, of course, being the DMV driving record list or state identification list that the DMV has put together. There's a much smaller minority, which is less than half of the 27, only 10, almost 1-3 difference, that are limiting themselves to a voter list. And then there's some other breakdowns besides that. But I guess it's real interesting when I hear what I'm hearing, because I guess I'll share one war story with you out of Texas. Harris County, there's an individual that walked into the trial with their attorney. They did not have a jury. And the judge said, we're going to set this over because we don't have a jury, or you can have a trial today in front of the court. And the defendant and his attorney talked about it and said, today's our day to be in court, and we demand a jury. And the judge said, we don't have one. He says, it's today, and we want a jury trial. So finally the judge said to his bailiff, I want you to go out and find me 12 individuals to come and serve as for this jury. I'm not sure how many they brought in, but what they did is they went down to Skid Row, and they picked a bunch of individuals that are, let's say, down on their luck, transient and type, people that you would probably prefer not to be on your jury if you were in such a situation. And the story I was told is that those individuals did get impaneled as the jurors. They did sit and listen to all the testimony, and they did return verdicts that were unfavorable to the defendant. And then at the conclusion of their jury service, they told the judge that this was the first time they had an opportunity to be involved in the process, and that they really welcomed it, and at any time they needed their assistance in the future, they would love to be there again. So to me, I just think pure poppycock to this thing about saying that someone who sends in a 33-cent postcard that says that they are now somehow more qualified than any other individual is ridiculous. And I really question, I want to put on the record as to whether or not that procedure that would be required is going to be equated to a poll tax and called a juror tax.
33 cents stamp or putting it in the mail?
Either or.
Mr. Chair.
President Sims.
I believe a person can drop it off at the county clerk's office and it doesn't cost anything. But I would like to add that providing a requirement that demonstrates at least an inclination to be somewhat to a higher degree of personal investment in how we run our nation society, and I don't think it's a punitive requirement at all, and I would support it.
Representative Pazansky.
I guess two other things regarding another little war story out of Texas. There in San Antonio, where I was raised, I think their last election, which was a bond issue, I think their turnout of eligible voters was less than 10%. It's quite interesting that if someone makes a conscious objective not to register to vote because their personal beliefs, whatever that might be, this procedure is basically going to take them out of the ability to serve. And I think that an individual should have the right, if they choose to, not it wouldn't be my right. I think it's better to be involved, engaged in the process. But to not be engaged in the voting process should not prohibit them from being able to participate in other functions of government.
I suppose if one was an anarchist and did not want to register to vote, I would respond that if they wanted to serve on a jury, they still could register to vote and not vote. They just have to re-register every couple of years when purging would be about to occur. On the other hand, I would think that if they were that anti-government in terms of not wanting to vote, that they probably would also not want to serve on a jury. And I would think that you would want to remove them from the jury if they didn't want to serve on the jury, because they might have resentment against the defendant as much as they might have resentment against the government. Although I'll leave that issue up to some trial judge someday when he has a proposed anarchist as a juror.
Mr. Chair, I do know Jehovah's Witnesses do not vote. And, you know, that's a large religious sect who, and I don't know why they don't vote, but I do know they don't vote. And so, again, there's a whole class of people that are excluded because of their religious beliefs from being able to participate, and that would be unfortunate.
Representative Terry.
The fact is, though, that those that very sect that you describe would not participate in the jury either, because they don't believe in the participation of government of any kind. Same would be for the Amish or other groups that decline their participation in government. They would not participate in jury trials either.
All right. I think we've thrashed out the issue. The vote in front of us, the proposal in front of us, is to substitute Representative Przanski's proposed Dash 3 amendments for the Dash 4 amendments, which were first proposed by Representative Simmons. So the clerk will call the roll on Representative Przanski's motion to substitute.
No. Oh, wait, what?
What? I think he wants
yes.
to vote aye on
yes.
that one.
Yes. Who's talking to you?
Rubs off, doesn't it?
She wanted to vote aye, and I think you wanted to vote
no.
Aye.
No,
no. How do you vote?
No, it was a no.
That was a no vote.
That was a no.
Aye.
You hear me?
No.
No.
Aye.
No. The motion to substitute is defeated. We have the Dash 4 amendments in front of us. There's a further debate. The clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the Dash 4 amendments.
No.
Representative
Miller? Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Szymanski. No. Mr. Chair.
Aye. The motion is carried.
Chair.
The Dash 4 amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons.
I would move H.89 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues have heard the motion. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to send H.J.R. 89 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
No, and I give notice of a possible minority report.
16.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. The motion is carried. H.J.R. 89 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, I'll mention that you can always give notice of minority report after I've declared the vote. I notice that people think they need to tell me that earlier. You can tell me after, even when we're done with work session, you can give notice of until 5 o'clock the same day as the meeting.
Mr. Chair, with that in mind, I'd like to give notice of possible minority report.
Representative Solomon Przanski will give notice of a possible minority report on H.J. 89, H.J.R. 89, and I'll designate myself as the carrier. This concludes the work session on H.J.R. 89, and we will move into work session on H.J.R. 90. Council, where are we with this one?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the original bill as well as the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. I have not had an opportunity to see the Dash 2s, which were provided to the committee this morning. The original resolution and the Dash 1s pertain to the right of the victim to be reasonably protected from the criminal defendant throughout the criminal justice process and juvenile delinquency proceedings, as well as provisions regarding the pretrial release of the defendant. And I believe that the Dash 1s have been explained to the committee previously.
Very well. Representative Simmons, do you move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
colleagues, Representative Simmons moves adoption of the dash one amendments to HJR 90. And Representative Brzezinski, I assume your dash twos are a substitute, so do you wish to make a motion?
Yes, I do. I'd like to make the motion to substitute the dash twos for the dash ones in HJR 90.
Representative Brzezinski moves substitution of the dash two amendments for the dash one amendments on HJR 90. To your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, again, what we're attempting to do with the dash twos is to make it a direct change in amending the section of the Constitution that's already part of the of our Constitution, specifically Section 14, Article 1, where it would then at that point put in the rights that many of the rights that are within the dash ones as to when a individuals could be given some type of security or bail and when they cannot, and what the requirement of the court is to determine whether or not it's appropriate. The other things that the dash two does is, based on the testimony we heard, it gives clarity, as Paul Snyder said, the concern of what the dash one provides or fails to provide is that there is not a an adjective on line two, or excuse me, page two, line 13, between the word is and danger. Suggestion that was made, and I agree with it, is that it should be a significant danger. And I'll continue on page two, line four, after the first of, to insert the word serious physical injury. That would, in fact, tie in very nicely with the definition that is been given within the term violent felony, where it's actual threatened serious physical injury. I believe that this is a much cleaner and more concise way of saying the two have to offer. It also clarifies who is going to be judged by the court as to what type of release parameters or qualifications are going to be necessary. The concern, without having the word such as serious in front of physical injury, is that you're basically broadening the net of individuals that are going to not be able to be released, because the physical injury is just a substantial pain. That would be an example of that as someone getting struck in the face and having pain to the jaw or to the cheek area, as compared to serious physical injury, where you have to, it requires more than just substantial pain. And so for those reasons, as and for the testimony we heard from the representative for the Association of Oregon Counties, that is why I brought forward the dash twos.
All right. I should explain that there is a rationale to the dash ones, and Mr. Snyder approached me this morning to inquire about the language, and I took another look at it. And the rationale is, we start out with a violent felony. That's in the definitions of page two of the dash ones. A violent felony. Violent felony is a felony in which there is actual or threatened serious physical injury to a victim, or a felony sexual offense. That's your first gradation. That's what's got to be here as part of this process. Another point in this filtering process is that, in regard to the pretrial release decision, the principle that is established here is reasonable protection of the victim and the public. So the judge will always be bound by the principle of reasonableness in evaluating all of this terminology and all of the facts. There is also the consideration of the likelihood that the criminal defendant will appear for trial. We have fairly traditional language about murder and aggravated murder and treason, so I won't go into the detail on that. But when we pick up the new approach, the court has to make a finding by clear and convincing evidence, which is just below, beyond a reasonable doubt, that there is danger of physical injury or sexual victimization to the victim or members of the public by the criminal defendant while on release. So we have a reasonableness requirement. We have to have a situation where a criminal defendant is in front of the court on serious charges. And in this process, the court will have to take a look at all of this under the standard of clear and convincing evidence. And yes, the second stage part of it does drop down from serious physical injury to physical injury. The point being that this defendant allegedly has already, in probability, although not beyond a reasonable doubt at this point, in probability has already committed serious physical injury. And the question now is dropping down a notch as to whether he's going to do something further. And at that point, we are concerned with protecting the victim from any further injury. That's what the rationale is behind that. The other language in the dash ones have to do with protecting the standard constitutional rights, and I won't go into detail on those. The district attorney, of course, is the party that's authorized to assess the rights of the victim and the public in these dash ones. But I'd go back again to emphasize that if you look at line 24 at the bottom of the dash ones and pick up with the top of page 2, from page 1 to page 2, we're talking about violent felonies. That's your first siphoning or filtering process. So the dash 2s are a narrower version, and we have that policy choice. Further discussion? Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is probably, HJR 90 is probably the one of these that I support the most. I hope it'll come out in a version that I can campaign for and work for. My preference would be to see that the dash two amendments be adopted to make the simplest and most compelling statement and the easiest statement to explain to the voters. I think this is needed. I'd like to be able to support it both on the floor and during the referendum process. But I think it would serve the public better if we've got the simplest language. I would doubt that we would see a defendant arguing for bail or release from a violent felony, drawing the distinction that they may only do physical injury to the victim and not serious physical injury. I think that's probably a bit of a hair splitting that does not seem really be a problem in the real world. But I would like to see the clearest and simplest version be presented to the voters so they can make an overwhelming and simple decision on this.
All right, we have the policy choice in front of us. The motion is by Representative Zanansky to substitute the dash 2 amendments for the dash 1 amendments which were previously proposed by Representative Simmons. On Representative Zanansky's motion, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Bantrella?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
No.
No.
Yes.
No. The motion is defeated. The dash one amendments are in front of us. Is there further discussion on the dash one amendments? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll. Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the dash one amendments.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Noah?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. The motion is carried. The amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move HCR 90 as amended by the dash one amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further debate? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to send HCR 90 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
No.
Representative
Miller?
Aye.
Representative
Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative
Hansen? No. Aye. The motion is carried. HJR 90 is sent to the floor with a due pass.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zanansky?
I'm going to give notice of possible minority report on HJR 90.
Noted. I will assign myself as the carrier on HJR 90. This concludes the work session on HJR 90. I move into work session on HJR 91. Thank you. Council, where are we on this?
On HJR 91, Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the dash 2 and the dash 3 amendments. As I indicated at a previous hearing, the dash 1 amendments contains some errors which can be discounted. So there are only the dash 2 and dash 3 amendments before the committee. HJR 91 in original form concerns the search and seizure provisions of the Oregon Constitution in Article 1, Section 9. That is also reflected in the Dash 2 amendments, and which does contain, of course, the standard preamble and some other clarifying language. And we have received the Dash 3 amendments this morning from, I believe, Representative Prosansky.
Very well. Representative Simmons, do you move adoption of the Dash 2 amendments?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Colleagues, Representative Simmons moves adoption of the Dash 2 amendments. Representative Prosansky, do you have a motion on the Dash 3?
Yes, I do. I, at this time, move for substitution of the Dash 3s for the Dash 2s. HJR 91.
Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Representative Prosansky, to your motion.
Mr. Chair, again, what we're attempting to do is to make certain the voters know what they are faced with as to the decisions they make. The Dash 2s provide for a new section of Article 1 to be established, where the Dash 3s in turn basically just makes the modification within the existing Article 1, Section 9 as to the changes that would be in place, limiting the interpretation of the Oregon Constitution to the standards set as interpreted by the U.S. appellate courts, relying on the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
It appears that the Dash 3 amendment actually moves in the opposite direction of the Dash 2 amendment. Be aware of that, at least from my reading of this. And this says subsection 1 of this section shall have no force and effect regarding the introduction or exclusion of evidence in criminal prosecutions unless the United States Supreme Court holds the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States no longer applies to actions of the state or its political subdivisions?
My interpretation, my understanding is that it basically says that the existing Section 9, Article 1, does not apply when it's in conflict with the interpretation by the U.S. Supreme Court holdings on the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I guess my interpretation would be moot if this is not adopted, but if it's adopted, my interpretation is that it basically says the opposite of that. But that's a question of interpretation of the language. In any event, we have this in front of us. We've debated these issues before. Is there further discussion on this motion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Prosansky's motion to substitute the Dash 3 amendments for the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Bowman?
Yes.
Representative Ginoa?
No.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
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 Yes.
No, the motion is defeated. We have the Dash 2 amendments in front of us. Is there further discussion on the Dash 2? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to HJR 91.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Aye.
Representative
Kucheri?
Yes.
Representative
Kozlowski?
No.
Amerik? Aye. The Dash 2 amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons?
Mr. Chair, I would move HJR 91 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor of the House to do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Further debate? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to send HJR 91 to the floor with a due pass as amended.
No.
Aye.
Representative
Hanson? No. Aye. Aye. No. Aye. The motion is adopted. HJR 91 is sent to the floor as amended. I'll designate myself as the carrier.
Yeah.
Representative Prosansky?
I'd like to give notice of possible minority report on HJR 91 as passed out by the committee.
Colleagues, you've heard the notice. Noted. This concludes the work session on HJR 91, and we'll open the work session on HJR 92. Council?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the original resolution and the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. What the resolution has to do with is allowing for a murder trial, 11 members of a 12-person jury to render a verdict of guilty. However, it does retain in both the Dash 1 and the original resolution form the requirement of unanimous verdict of guilty for aggravated murder. We received the Dash 2 amendments this morning from Representative Prosansky.
All right, Representative Hanson, excuse me, Representative Simmons, do you move the adoption of the dash one amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of dash one amendments.
All right, the motion's in front of us to adopt dash one. Representative Kozanski, do you have a motion?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move substitute the dash twos for the dash ones in HJR 92.
All right, colleagues, you've heard the motion. To your motion, Representative Kozanski.
Mr. Chair, again, this is an attempt to make it clear to the voters as to exactly what they will be voting on, as to what the amendment will do and where it should be properly placed. The dash ones basically create a new section under Article 1. The dash twos basically makes the amendment in the existing section of the Constitution, which is Section 11, Article 1. And it basically provides for the same provisions as to an individual could, in fact, be found guilty of a charge of murder on 11-1 verdict. Again, it's just for clarity and simplicity to put everything before the voters in the appropriate place in the Constitution that's already existing instead of creating a new section within that article.
All right. Colleagues, you've heard the debate. Is there further debate? The motion in front of us is Representative Kozanski's motion to substitute the dash two amendments for the dash one amendments. The clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman.
Yes.
Representative Gianella.
No.
Representative Hanson.
Yes.
Representative
No.
Representative
No. Yes.
No, the motion is defeated. The dash one amendments are in front of us. Is there further debate on those amendments? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the dash one amendments.
Representative Bowman.
No.
Representative Gianella.
Aye.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Representative Simmons.
Aye.
Representative
Cesari. Aye.
Representative
No.
Aye. The motion is carried. The dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons, do you have a motion on the main bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move HJR 92 as amended by the dash one amendments to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further debate? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman.
No.
Representative
Gianella.
Aye.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Aye.
Representative
Cesari.
Yes.
No. Aye. The motion is carried. HJR 92 is sent to the floor with a due pass.
Mr. Chair.
I'll designate myself as carrier. President Bowman.
I want to give you notice of possible minority report on HJR 92.
All right. Notice.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to give that same notice.
Also noted. This concludes the work session on HJR 92. We'll move on to work session on HJR 93. Move into that work session, Council.
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the dash 2 and the dash 3 amendments, not the dash 1s. What this resolution has to do with is the right of a criminal defendant under the U.S. Constitution not to be compelled to testify, and that Section 12 of Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution does not bar the prosecution and conviction of a person who has been compelled to testify in a criminal or juvenile case proceeding involving a victim. The Dash 2 amendments contain some slightly different language in addition to the preamble, provide that Section 12 of Article 1 has the same force and effect as the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, no further force and effect, with additional language in the first paragraph of the Dash 2 amendments. The committee has received the Dash 3 amendments this morning from Representative Kozanski.
Representative Simmons, do you move adoption of the Dash 2 amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
All right, colleagues, we have that motion in front of us. Representative Kozanski, do you have a motion on the Dash 3s?
Yes, I do. Substitute them for the Dash 2s in HJR 93.
All right, so Representative Kozanski, move substitution of the Dash 3 for the Dash 2 amendments. To your motion?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, what we're wanting to do is to place this change where I believe it's appropriate, and that's in the existing section of the Article 1, which would be Section 12, and it basically makes it very concise, very succinct as to what the intent of the measure that resolution that would be before the voters is as compared to creating a new separate section within Article 1, again, being the purest and traditionalist for the Constitution. I'd like to try to keep all that together for the voters.
All right, thank you. I would note that on the Dash 2 amendments, there's a specific statement as to the Fifth Amendment and how that's to be construed. in regard to Section 12, but also the statement in regard to relevant evidence and its admissibility, and is intended to stand alone as an amendment to the Oregon Constitution rather than simply an interlineation. But I also understand that the dash threes are proposed to be more specifically such an interlineation. Colleagues, any further debate? The motion in front of us is to substitute the dash three amendments for the dash two amendments. The clerk will call the roll on that simplification motion.
Representative
Bowman? Yes.
Representative Gianella?
No.
Representative Hanson?
Yes.
Representative Simmons?
No.
No. Yes. No, the motion is defeated. We have now in front of us HJR 93 with the dash two amendments being proposed by Representative Simmons. Is there further discussion on that? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the dash two amendments.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Aye.
Representative
Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Conferri?
Yes.
Representative?
No.
Chairman Aye. Excuse me. The motion is adopted. Representative Simmons, you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move HGR 93 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further debate? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Conferri?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Aye. The motion is passed. HGR 93 has amended the sense of the floor with a due pass. I will assign myself as carrier.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to give notice at this time of possible minority report on HJR 93.
Noted.
Second.
Also with Representative Bowman. Noted.
I'll reserve my right until 5 o'clock tonight.
All right. This concludes the work session on HGR 93, and we move into work session on HGR 94. Council?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the dash one and the dash two amendments to HGR 94. What this has to do with is prohibiting the legislature from allowing a parole board or other authority to modify or reduce convicted criminal sentence, and also regarding imposing consecutive sentences on criminals convicted of crimes with different victims. That is a summary of both the original HJR as well as the dash one amendments, which do provide some further clarifying language, including the preamble. The dash two amendments are also before the committee and were provided this morning by Representative Prozanski.
Representative Simmons?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the dash one amendments to HCR 94.
Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Representative Prozanski, do you have a motion on the dash two?
Yes, I do, to substitute the dash twos for the dash ones in HCR 94.
To your motion, Representative Prozanski?
Mr. Chair, again, what we're attempting to do is to put a little more clarity as to what is going to be before the voters, and removing the preamble language and limiting the dash twos to the criminal proceedings where victims are impacted within that area. The other thing that it does do, which I think is important as a legislative body, is to preserve the right for future legislators to be able to make whatever changes they deem appropriate in the future, not to have their legislative authority or power to be tied from unknown circumstances that may create or evolve between, let's say, the passage of if the dash one should in fact become law and any problem in the future. So the bottom line is it preserves the ability for the legislature through its official powers and duties to be able to make changes if they deem appropriate in some future time.
All right. Colleagues, the essential philosophical difference between the dash two and the dash one amendments is that under the dash ones, as proposed by Representative Simmons, a future legislative assembly could not retroactively reduce sentences imposed by the judge. Under the dash twos, it is clear that the legislative assembly could do so. So that is the major distinction. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Zanski's motion to substitute the dash two amendments for the dash one amendments.
Yes.
Representative Gino?
No.
Representative Hanson?
Yes.
No.
No.
Representative Kozowski?
Yes.
No. The motion is defeated. We have the dash one amendments in front of us. Is there further debate on the dash one? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the dash one amendments to HJR 94.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gino?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Aye. Aye.
Representative Kozowski?
So.
Aye. The dash one amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a motion to move HCR 91, excuse me, 94, as amended by the dash one amendments, to the floor of the House with a D-pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to send HCR 94 to the floor with a D-pass as amended.
No.
Representative
Gino? Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No. Aye. The motion is carried. HR 94 is sent to the floor as amended with a D-pass recommendation. I'll designate myself as carrier. Do I hear notices of minority reports?
Yes.
Representative Kozowski?
HR 94.
All right.
And, Mr. Chair, just to make sure, I know it wasn't said you didn't note it, but for HJR 87, I also want to make certain that it's on the record that I'm also getting that notice.
Very well. Noted. This concludes the work session on HJR 94. We have one other bill in front of us. One will be reviewed. Council, one of these is the director and the Secretary of State, 2352, will need to set for Thursday. 2353 is in front of us. We'll move into work session on House Bill 2353. Council, where are we with this?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the dash six amendments. The previous amendments had to do with really HJR 7, and so the dash six amendments take care of the fact that instead of one single HJR being before the committee, that the committee has instead dealt with multiple HJRs. The content in the dash six amendments deals with establishing the ballot titles and the summaries and the result of yes vote and the result of no vote for each of the separate HJRs, and they are within the word limits that are dictated by the Oregon revised statutes for the ballot titles and summaries.
This in effect would have us establish, if we adopt the dash six amendments, our own equivalent of the Attorney General's certified ballot title, but it's still subject to review by the Supreme Court if somebody challenges.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Very well. Representative Simmons, do you move adoption of the dash six amendments to House Bill 2353?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Colleagues, you have that motion in front of you. Debate on the motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kozowski.
I will not be able to support the dash six because I believe in our process that we should allow, since this is not a vote that's going to be rushed to the voters. My understanding is that this will not be before the voters before November of this year at the earliest. And with that in mind, it seems to me that we should allow the process to allow the legislature to actually appoint a committee to put this together. Clearly, there has, I don't know who, what individuals serving a work group are putting this together, but I believe that the process requires us to allow for the discussion and debate in formulating what would in fact be ballot titles for each of these important HJRs.
I would mention that there still will be an explanatory statement that is presented by a committee as per the regular process. There still is an opportunity to challenge a ballot title to the Supreme Court. What this does is serve as a substitution of having the Attorney General draft a ballot title, and the legislature can do this if the governor signs the bill. If he doesn't sign the bill, then we're back to having the Attorney General do it. But that is the issue in front of us. Is there further discussion on the motion to adopt the dash six amendments? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Simmons' motion to adopt the dash six amendments to HTR, excuse me, House Bill 2353.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative
Ginella? Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Kozowski?
Aye. Motion carries. The I-6 amendments are adopted. Representative Simmons, you have a motion on the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2353 as amended by the -6 amendments to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Further debate? Seeing none, the clerk will call. Excuse me, Representative Hanson.
If any of these resolutions would fail to get majority support on the floor, will this have to return to committee to be voted on?
I would say no, because it says if House Joint Resolution 87, if House Joint Resolution 88. So those are all ifs. They're conditional statements. And if they were modified by, say, adoption of minority reports on the floor, that would be a matter for us to consider whether to re-refer to committee or to simply have the Senate address it when they address the legislation. Clerk will call the roll on the motion to refer 2353 to the floor when it be passed as amended.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gennaro?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Kozlowski?
No.
Aye. The motion carries. HB 2353 is sent to the floor with a due pass. I'll designate myself as carrier. Representative Bowman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to give you notice of possible minority report.
All right. Noted.
Mr. Chair, I also give the same notice.
Noted. This concludes the work session on House Bill 2353, and we are adjourned. Thank you all.
Kevin. Hey,